Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
FM 102.3 FM Riverside
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
I asked a bird how to sing, and the meaning of a song.
Comes a forest fire. comes a forest fire. I wanna be a spark, becomes a forest fire. I wanna be a spark, becomes a forest fire.
Okay, now people listening probably haven't heard that song before because it's not something we played before. Babe, are you still there?
Absolutely.
Well, you know. Yeah. So that was from a new artist, someone that I've met before, and we've sort of known each other for a little while now, and he's got a debut album out now. And so that song is called I Want to Be a Spark, and joining us is the artist and the singer, the writer, just everything, Peter Lawrence. Thank you for being here.
I really appreciate you having me. Thanks so much.
Tell us about that. So that song, where did it come from?
So it's interesting. Initially, we tracked 10 songs, and we did that at Dockside in Louisiana with the rhythm section. And as I went along, one of those songs was not cutting the mustard. The other ones I felt were very strong, and one was not. So I decided, okay, this is going to be a 9-song project. I'd rather have 9 songs that I felt strongly about than have one on there that I didn't. And then the pandemic happened, and I was in isolation, and out of the bowels of the pandemic comes I Want to Be a Spark, which is really the centerpiece of this project. It's very upbeat. It's really positive. And it was recorded remotely, whereas all those initial tracks were recorded in the rhythm section was recorded at Dockside. This was recorded completely remotely. So the bass player was in Nashville. The drummer was in New Orleans. The percussionists were a different studio in Nashville. The background vocalists were at a different studio in Nashville. The cellist was in Vermont. So it's very interesting how this particular one came together. And I'm happy because I feel like even though it was recorded separately, it still fits in really nice to the entire project.
Well, and that's crazy. And I mean, how is that recording something like that where you're all separate? Like that must have some challenges.
You know, it definitely does it. And it's interesting because the way it started out, you know, I basically wrote the song, and the way I work is I write on guitar, I write on piano, but I'm average at playing. And so what I'll do to really dial in my vocal is I'll send that track off to a pianist or a guitar player that I know will do a perfect job with the track and send it back to me. In this case here, I sent it off and I said, okay, just give me my track back exactly how I played it, but do it with perfect timing, basically. And then also, I like to involve people's creativity. So I said, okay, give me something back that's your interpretation of what I did. So I get these two files back, and I accidentally hit play at the same time. And so I'm hearing his part and my part, two basically harmony guitars, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's the song. So I went back to him, and I said, okay, just put these together, and that was the heart of the song. It was pretty much accidental. It kind of reminds me of Landslide from Fleetwood Mac. And
yeah.
It really makes the song. So I like working like that, spontaneously and accidentally. And that's sort of the nuts and bolts of that one.
Well, it sounds like you write in conjunction with the music, or do you write lyrics first?
So it's interesting how that happens for me. I don't know how it happens for other people. I've heard stories, I've read about it, but I literally will get a word or a phrase. And it's the type of thing where it's not coming down from my mind. Like it's not an awakening in my mind. It literally is as if it's coming up from my belly, from the place of intuition. So it's a feeling of it coming up rather from down. And when I feel that, it's a strong sensation. I know right away I get out my phone and I just write down whatever that idea that has arisen. And generally then the next day I get another. So what happens is over the course of, say, a week or 2 weeks, I have all of these what appear to be random thoughts. I don't censor it. I just have that feeling in my body. I write them down, and then I also get the feeling like, okay, whatever this is complete. And I will then look through my notes, because the less I actually think about it and judge it, the more freely it flows. And then I can very easily see, oh, wow, here's the chorus, here's the bridge, here's the first, literally, like, I Want to Be a Spark, probably I spent 15 minutes on it. So once I literally took those pieces, again, the universe is non-linear. And so all I had to do is just rearrange the pieces. And once those pieces are there and the form is there, then I, again, get that feeling again, that place of intuition. It's time to sit down at the piano. I don't sit down at the piano. I don't sit at the guitar until I have that sense of completion felt in my body. And then literally the music just flows straight through. And I walk away and it's done. And that's when I send it off to someone who's a lot more talented than I at playing. And that's how it comes about. And I don't know, again, without judgment, how anyone else does it. But literally, there was a time that I felt like I wanted to write songs. And what I wrote was horrible. And I was almost ashamed of what I was writing, because I felt that so much more was possible. I just didn't sense that I had access to it. So I actually completely surrendered the craft. I gave up. I sold my guitar, sold my piano. I stopped writing songs because I just couldn't bear writing another crappy song. And so after a year went by, I met this minister, and she gave me a guitar, and that was the moment that just all these songs, that's when I felt what it felt like just to have the music just rush through me. So it was this place of surrender that allowed creativity to really open up. You know, that the muse can't be possessed. That's my experience.
Wow. That's sort of like Dave in a sense. Well, you know, but Dave hears voices in his head, and he writes them down, and he puts out these fiction books and stories and stuff. So,
exactly.
Yeah, you know, he's a little bit insane.
But I'm nuts.
But so you say it doesn't come from the mind, it's coming from down below. So where do you think that these things come from for you?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it is very philosophical, but
yeah.
To me, the entire universe is music. That's my understanding. You know, spiritually, the entire universe, if you want to know what it is music. So when we're just tuned in to the universe, you know, like the idea of the Om, and it makes this primordial sound. Well, everything is vibration. So if you're open to receiving that, you know, the muse will speak to you, whether that's writing books or whether it's music. It's all coming from the primordial sound of the universe. And I've tried it the other way, and it was horrible.
Yeah, but looking back at it, do you really think it was horrible? Could you look back at what you were doing before? Maybe it just didn't feel right, but was it really?
You know what? Maybe I'm a little hard on myself. I've got pretty high standards.
Yeah.
And I've really, strove in every respect to meet those standards. But yes, I remember like my first real demo was in college, and it was at Star Tracker Recording Studio in Lincoln, Nebraska, 24 track, 2-inch tape. It was 3 demos. I can tell you the band was a lot better than the songs, I got some great experience. I really sunk my teeth in deep, we made some cool sounds. I'm sure I can go back. I can find a line in each one of those songs that I would maybe steal. But that's about it. So, again, you're right about that. So it's just a question of, we're just getting experience as artists every time we take the risk of doing our art. So I'm being hard on myself, but even maybe a little facetious. But
yeah.
it is honest. I wouldn't put that music out today.
Well, I mean, today it might be hit.
I don't know. I have to find that tape and just for laughs.
Yeah. Well, because personally, I can look back at some of my first books, and I can think they're just awful, that was just terrible. and even first radio shows years ago, like 10 years ago and stuff. And these are, but it's really not as bad as I think, because people still approach me and say, oh, you know, listen, this was great. I really like this or something. And you're like, wow, okay.
There's definitely things I could find that are that I would like and I would be proud of, but not much.
what do you think influenced you to write I want to be a spark? Like what do you think, what was around you, and what do you think was the catalyst for that?
Well, if you think about this, you know, as I said, that it arose out of the bowels of the pandemic, that, you know, when we feel, you know, like things are dark, you know, and we're called to go inside of ourselves, like the winter time. The winter time is the time that we go inside, right, into the interior self. That's how I looked at it. It's the time to go in and like really like excavate and evaluate like what is, you know, what we're holding within ourselves and cleanse ourselves. And so I guess that was just part of that process. And the answer to that was, you know, I want to find my best self, and I want to share that best self out into the world, and hope that, you know, everybody has a chance to find their best self and share that out into the world, because that's how we get out of where we are.
Now, when you have someone listen to your album or listen to that song in particular, is there an underlying thing there that you want them to take home or think about? Is that, I mean, besides the words, is there something deeper? Is there a meaning that you're hoping people pick up?
I think if there is, it's literally what I had said. It was what I just said. It's that, you know, we have our highest self and we have our lowest self. And at any moment, we can make a choice or start making a choice to be our highest vision of ourself. So if somebody hears that and says, you know, I want to be a spark that starts a forest fire. I want to be something good, and I want to share that goodness out into the world. And I believe that when that goodness really can't be anything other than that, because it literally just wants to be shared. So I think that's it.
That's really interesting. Do you draw from other bands? Like you mentioned Fleetwood Mac, Landslide. Is there some influences that come into your work like that?
Well, absolutely. I have been mostly influenced by Jackson Browne. I remember my sister was in sixth grade, I was in third grade, and I remember seeing Running on Empty on her floor, and she was spinning it on her record player. And I remember that moment, and ever since then, I've been drawn to Jackson Browne's music. And a close second is James Taylor, and I love what both those artists do. I particularly love James Taylor's backing vocals. Like Carly Simon said, nobody does it better. When it comes to backing vocals, nobody does it better. He is enormously creative. I set out in this project to create vocals that would be equal to that. And I don't know if I ever can or will meet that. That is a very high standard, but that's how I think about, you know, and esteem James Taylor and the creativity, particularly when it comes to the backing vocals. And of course, I grew up in Jersey, so a close third would be Bruce Springsteen. He's a brilliant songwriter. I don't need to tell anybody that. But growing up in Jersey, that, you know, all that stuff just washed over me. Those are the artists that influenced me. And I feel like Jackson Browne, I know his father was, I believe, a minister, and James Taylor had a spiritual awakening. Both those artists are willing to speak in spiritual terms without overwhelming or beating anyone over the head. And I really resonate that with that. So,
geez, I thought Carly Simon was singing that about me.
she was.
Yeah. Now I'm crushed. I'm just crushed. That's just awful.
I thought she was singing about me.
Well, we all did, I guess.
We all did, right?
Devastation. Well, and now, so a second track you picked for us, like to be playing, we'll play next. It's called "Like a Telegram." What can you tell us about that song?
I remember growing up in the during the Cold War, and I was young during this time, and I didn't understand what a nuclear bomb was, and you know, what the, you know, whole implications of the potential nuclear war meant. And in 1989, when the Berlin Wall fell, I remember that my body just completely relaxed, because at that time I understood, and I think the whole world took this great sigh of relief, felt a sigh of relief, and we all sort of felt it. If you guys remember how that felt, you know, there was this great hope and possibility that seemed to emerge. And so I remember this time, and I remember feeling safe, and I remember feeling all this hope and potential for the world. And then it seems like since 9/11, things have changed. Like, I don't necessarily feel that so much as I used to. So there was this place of innocence, you know, between 89 and 9/11, that I'm just so grateful that I know that I was able to feel that. So this song, Like a Telegram, is about just remembering times that felt really great and wishing for it. And of course, if you have that desire, then the hope is still there. So it's a hopeful song. There's a little gloom, but all these songs ultimately have positive messages. So that's where that one comes from. Mm. It's all about wishing for and remembering, you know, what felt good. And it's interesting, it's not intentional, but there's a reference to Steely Dan in the lyrics. And, you know, as far as production, you know, and being a studio band, they were a studio band for a while, and, you know, they really went for a warm, focused sound. And so this song is, you know, is not Steely Dan. It's a different vibe, but there's a lot of the similar aesthetics as far as production that went into it for all those people who are interested in that sort of thing.
Mm. You know, it's amazing too, you know, because us old enough to remember the times from the 80s before 9/11, you know, for me I could never see it coming, what came in the last 5 years or so. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It seemed like we were going in a direction and you'd never turn back. You're just going to go forward. It might go at different speeds, but I didn't see that turn in the road, as you might call it.
Yeah, and, you know, going back to what you were saying about spark, I mean, I have to believe that there's goodness and that we can tap into that and move forward. Like, that has to be, you know, otherwise why get out of bed at the beginning of the day? So again, the whole album is ultimately about hope in different forms and about, you know, different spiritual themes. But yeah, okay. I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I never want to get out of bed anyway. So
well, it's cold up in Canada. Well, not now.
No.
Not now. It's not.
No, actually, it's been hot everywhere.
I know. I've been reading the news about Canada and its weather. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been really hot. It's been, you know, 110, 115. 116. It's been pretty warm. So
crazy.
Yeah. Well, we'll lead off with Like a Telegram, and we'll go to our sponsors, and we'll be back right after this.
I miss the warm Steely Dan, blowing like a summer breeze on FM 89. The wall fell for a moment, all was well. I'd do anything to feel that good again. So I'm sending out this prayer. Telegram. On a white horse I rode into your life, from the northwest southern pines. I love to golf at Sundy Club. Could have been nice, you were unkind. We dreamed a dream and burned it out. With jealousy and self-doubt.
Great song, a great, great song. So when you get a few songs like this and you're putting it together an album like this, what's your overall concept of the album? Or do you have that ahead of time, or do you build it from the songs?
Well, I can tell you this. This is probably not the answer you were thinking, but the way that this album came about was I was in Nashville doing a songwriter's workshop with Beth Nielsen, the great singer-songwriter, and I was warming up, and I just started strumming and playing, you know, singing this song, "The Old Five and Dime," which is just one more song that I had thrown away. I write them, and then, you know, they pretty much, in order to stay creative, I try not to attach to what I create. So I didn't really think much about it. I was just warming up, and she just looked up at me and she said, "I want to hear the demo of that." And so right there in that moment, I decided, okay, I better collect, you know, at least 10 songs that I think are strong and start putting a couple things out there. And that's how the idea of this particular album came about. So I just picked the 10 strongest songs that I'd written up to that point. And again, one got cut, and then "I Want to Be a Spark" got placed in there, and that's how the album came together.
There is a connection, like you quite often talk about in spiritual terms. So there is a connection to each of these songs.
You know, for me, the music, and another reason why I don't attach to the art is because I want to stay present in the moment. I want to be. To me, that's where the thrill is. It's in the creative moment. So I really try to, again, just place things aside so that something new can come along. And I think that's served me well.
Yeah.
I've got you know, bins of songs. I've got notebooks. I don't look back at them. I don't get attached to the idea of what it is. And mostly, to answer your question a little bit more specifically, the song is a reflection of where I'm at spiritually, emotionally, at any given time. So if I'm doing my job correctly, I'm growing. And that's another reason why I can't attach to the song, because, you know, what I wrote a year ago is not where I am today. So I feel like, you know, if I write a song right now, it's going to be more resonant with me than what was written a year ago. So it's sort of a double-edged sword, you know, giving up on what you've created so that you can create something new. But at some point, maybe we'll go back and look through all that stuff.
That's very interesting. I'm wondering, you're talking about the 80s and going back to experiences that you had. And I had just seen a, I did watch an interview with Lisa Loeb, where she was talking about with her song Stay. And she kind of intimated that it was a story, but it may not have been like a real situation that she had actually been in. And I was just wondering, do you pull from your own experiences, other people's experiences, when you construct a song?
Or a lot of times the songs are not autobiographical. They're characters in a movie. I think in visual terms, and I tell stories, and I'm using the character to communicate an idea.
I see.
So most of the time, no. And also, as I said, most of what's coming through, I'm not really conscious of. Obviously, part of it is a reflection. I think that the deeper ideas are a reflection of my thoughts and my emotions, my spirituality. But the outer veneer is a movie.
Very much like writing fiction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. To tell the story. You lie to tell the truth.
Well, there you go, Dave.
Yeah, exactly.
There's the method. So all these songs you wrote, you're not going to be like Prince, you know, who dies and then family members are going to come in and start reselling all your stuff that you never want it to get out.
I hope not.
I asked you.
But you never know. Well, I'm not banking on much.
Yeah, because that's pretty awful, you know. You're kind of rating an artist and what they did and things that for some whatever reason they didn't think it was finished or put it out, and then to take that and then launch it for your own money's sake. It's kind of
I think everyone who knows me knows that I'm not interested in being known, but I would like the music to be known, and there's a big difference in intention.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's story of my life. I mean, I hide and
you get to burn all your old stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody can get at it.
So now,
when you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, your next song you chose for us to listen to is Love Will Last. That seems to be a little bit more emotional for you. Is this true, or where does this come from?
It totally ties into your last question. So I'll tell you the story of how that song came about, and you can see how this is actually pretty random. So I was in probably a different class in Nashville, and I had been, it was like all weekend, I was exhausted. I was coming back through the Nashville airport, and I was at that little lounge there where they have this guy that plays guitar. He's a really great guitar player, and I was just sitting there enjoying this guy play. And then he took a break, and this guy sort of meanders over to me. I sort of catch him out of the corner of my eye, and I have my guitar with me. He's sort of like this big, burly, apparently intoxicated guy, and he just kind of comes up to me, and he's like, "Can you play me a song?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm really sorry, but like, I'm not here for that." "Oh, come on, play me a song." And I'm thinking, okay, I'm just like too tired to, like, I'm thinking this is going to get like aggressive, and I don't have the energy to defend myself. I'm just hoping he goes away. And finally, his wife, who's sitting at another table, she says, "Just leave the guy alone." And so he just kind of stumbles away, and I go back into my little world. And then a little while later, out of the corner of my eye, I see that same guy walking over to the table. It was his wife, and I think it was his sister. And he's carrying this big bouquet of flowers that he just bought out of one of those carousels. And he just sort of like pushes into their face, and he says, "Here, I got these for you guys, because I really love you. But you have to share them, because they're expensive." Listen to the lyrics of that song. In that moment, literally, that entire song streamed out of me. I pulled out my phone. I wrote the whole thing, like, in 2 seconds. And then I pulled out my guitar in the Nashville airport, found a place, and I wrote the music. By the time I got on my plane, that song was done.
Wow.
And it's interesting. And, of course, it's just sort of like a fun pop song. I love the punk edge on it. It's like, reminds me of my 16-year-old self thrashing around in the basement with a Les Paul. it does have a deeper spiritual message. And it's, you know, that our, you know, the love of our, you know, our love life is not the same as divine love. You know, divine love lasts forever. You know, the love that we have here on earth is impermanent. And so that, and it's a very like subtle, you know, punky, upbeat song, but if you dig into it, there's actually meaning there that's significant. And it took me a minute to tease that out, by the way, because again, the muse just spoke to me, and the muse speaks to me when I'm in Nashville. I don't know why. And that song comes out, and then I have to ponder, and then I finally realize, oh, okay, that's what it is. I mean, that's what it is for me. I trust that everybody can hear what they hear and decide what it means for them. But, you know, my interpretation is that that's what the muse was trying to convey through this very simple song.
All of attraction makes the world go round. A single glance is all it takes to speed nothing to bound. Love builds fast, flowers from a carousel. Put the money in, very expensive, sentimental, worth the price to see you smile. Love will last for a while. Lovers sit in cafes, side by side, kiss the way home. On their chance to get right, love your back. Flowers from a carousel, put the money in, and turn to die. Very expensive, sentimental, worth the price to see. Love will last for a while. One cool word, and the bubble burst. Then it don't feel like it did at first. Love will last.
ever worry about kind of giving away too much of yourself in some of these songs, or exposing some of your feelings to the world?
You know, I really don't think in that term. I strive to be honest, and whatever that means. I remember when we were doing the percussion, Eric Dorkin, who's a percussionist out of Nashville, you know, he said, you know, this really sounds honest. And I realized I had done my job well to have Eric Dorkin say that. And so I'm not my story, you know, so I'm hoping that people find inspiration in the meanings and ultimately the hopefulness of the songs. And if I've been able to do that, I'll feel successful with it.
How has it changed you writing songs like this? Because coming out of the process, you must feel different. There must have been some sort of a development or change in your own, I don't know, in your own persona.
Ask that question another way, if you wouldn't mind. It's throwing me off a little bit.
Well, what I mean is, like, when, because, like, okay, for Dave and I, we both write books, and I think I can speak for him and stories. And every time you go through a story and you write a book and you put it out, once it's completed and done, I'm different now. I'm no longer the same person I was before I wrote it.
I see. Well, okay, so that's interesting, because what I experience, since I sort of pull all the information in like emotional and spiritual terms, is that the song is teaching me. So the song comes to me with some awareness, and it is ahead of where I am. So the song itself, for me personally, becomes a benchmark of something to understand that I can begin to walk towards developmentally. So I think about it like, you know, when you're 16, or say you're 13, and you get a Christmas present, you know, of a sweater, but it's only going to fit you when you're 20. That's how the music is for me. A lot of times, I don't feel ready to embody it because it's ahead of me. I grow into the songs. Does that make sense?
Well, I was also wondering, we were talking about influences. Do you listen to anything that might surprise fans of yours, or do you have any surprising influences that get pulled in when you're writing?
I don't know that I have any surprising influences. I love the music of the 70s. I'm more focused and drawn into melodic tones as opposed to rhythmic types of music. Nothing crazy. Other than, you know, I like the Ramones, and I love the hard edge of some of the guitar tracks from the Cars, and the new wave sound that came up in the 80s. I love that sort of hard edge stuff. So that some of this is very mellow and gentle, and leaning more towards, say, James Taylor and Jackson Browne, and some of it is more, you know, fed by that impulse from listening to all that hard edge stuff from the 80s.
I can hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, it you know, I guess in some sense it makes it a little contemporary, you know, having that edge to the softer stuff.
Yeah.
And I like that it brings balance. One thing defines the other, it gives definition to the other thing. So to me, it doesn't feel out of place. If you just listen to the first track and then you go to Love Will Last, you might feel shell-shocked. But this is designed as a project. I don't think people really record like this anymore, because people are listening to singles. But this has a beginning, it has a middle, and it has an end. It's a roller coaster ride. You get on it, it starts out slow, it builds, and then it comes back down and you get off the ride. And if you're willing to listen to 10 songs in a row, then you get that experience. And it's fine. People can listen in any way that suits them. But I conceived it and recorded it, produced it as a concept project, not singles.
When you do that, I mean, it seems like you've looked particularly for people to help produce and record this album. It seems that way. Is that true? Like, are you very particular about who you work with?
Yeah, for sure. I wound up producing it. At first, I thought that I would have a producer, but as I went along, I realized that in order to bring about the vision that I wanted, I needed to produce it. So ultimately, I did. And then I have had enough experience in the studio that, you know, I pretty much have a rule. You have to be fun to be around. You have to be creative. You have to be good people. And this basic rhythm section, Shane Terrio, all these guys are all out of New Orleans. Mike Lemler, Craig Young's actually from Nashville, and Doug Belote. These are guys I've known, except for Craig, 10 years. They did demos for me about 10 years ago, and they're great New Orleans musicians and fun to be around. And that, you know, all those interaction and the chemistry gets onto the tape. So I am very particular, making sure that I've got really high caliber musicians, but also really high caliber people.
Yeah, it's important. Do you have to like the people you work with? Like, do you have to have a kind of a relationship, or is it just, can it be professional?
I do. When you're talking about this intimacy of the music, that's definitely important to me, for sure. And that's why, you know, it took a while to actually get this off the ground. Doug and Shane and I, we all kind of collaborated and talked about how we did this. And what we decided was the best thing to do was to go live at Dockside, which is Maurice, Louisiana. It's a gritty studio. It's a good studio. It's gritty. But you can live there. So, you know, Doug was like, yeah, we won't have our cell phones on and we can all hang out. And so, you know, the idea of how we were going to do it, you know, I collaborated with Doug and Shane, and those guys, I'm so grateful for their contributions. All the guitar playing, and anyone who hears it wants to know who the drummer is. There's, to me, you know, Mick, going back to Fleetwood Mac, Fleetwood Mac's drumming, you know, Mick Fleetwood, every beat sounds harmonic. It has a melodic content to it, even though it's a rhythm instrument. And Doug, if you listen to those beats throughout this project, they're just, everything is so precise and crisp and whimsical. Yeah, it's a great quality in a drummer, and I'm so glad that they were on this project.
Now, the next track, The Old Five and Dime, where did that come from?
Well, this, it's an interesting song because there's a lot of different fodder in it, and that is not a curse. I said fodder.
Yeah. Okay. We're allowed to do that anyway.
So. Yeah, fodder is good. So, like, this existential question, you know, if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound? Well, like, the bigger question is, if you live your life and nobody sees or pays attention, did you live your life? Did you live a quality life? It sort of ponders that question. And of course, I have my answer to it. I might be curious to see what you guys think about it, or anybody else, but, you know, I've got a strong opinion about, you know, the ultimate meaning. If anyone sees a shooting star, does it shine? Does it fly? Well, what do you think?
Well, it does. It's important for the people that are shining and living at the time, right? So I'm a depressed man, so
I don't blame you. Yeah. We all are.
Yeah, but now Dave here, he's happy, you know. So
always.
Well, so what do you think, Dave? if no one sees a shooting star, does it shine?
We're getting way too far into a philosophy here, right? Yeah, I don't know. I guess it depends on the eye of the beholder.
For sure.
Right. There you go. Well,
your audience can decide for themselves.
Yeah. Let them figure it out. So we'll do that track now.
dusted off a picture and I blew from the page. Frozen years ago, like rusty gears in the garage. On my soul, but it tracks for late. Now there's a secret heart.
Business these days, you know, because the old day of you know, before streaming and all that, and it's got to have changed. How do you feel about the business part of it now?
I don't have any feelings about it. I think I did as I was watching it evolve, but at this point, it is what it is. So you can roll with it, or you can resist it, and I don't resist. I try not to resist anything that shows up in my life. So, just however, wherever it takes me, that's where I go. I'm not going to argue with it like that. You could waste a lot of time, a lot of energy doing that. You know,
yeah.
The good old days are over.
I guess. Yeah. No, it's just curious because I just wonder how hard it is to make money, and I don't mean, you know, the rich old days and stuff, but I'm talking about just surviving money and stuff. It's you know, you're not going to make a whole lot of money off the songs you write.
this is true, and it, since it's not my goal to make money, I don't really give that much thought. I mean, honestly, I'm more interested in dialoguing about the meaning of the songs and what that means to people, and these sort of discussions like we're having, I really appreciate, because this is why I did it. Now, at some point, if there's some revenue streams that come from, you know, they will present themselves. As I alluded to before, I don't have much ambition, but if there is any ambition, it already exists within the music. All I have to do is pay attention to it, and that's what I do. And that's how we wound up here on this interview.
Well, in the same vein, I was just wondering if you think streaming itself with all the platforms puts artists kind of more on the same level, the same playing field as maybe somebody who's really famous and someone who is more of a beginner in the industry. Do you think it levels things out a bit for people, for artists?
It definitely does. And the part of that challenge, too, is that I think there's like 40,000 songs being added to Spotify every day. There's, you know, we're being inundated with different forms of media. So yes, we're having more access, but there's, because of that access, we're being buried in it. But at the end of the day, I believe, you know, the muse decides what is heard and what is not heard. And that's where I'm at. So I'm not attached to, you know, how prolific or not the music becomes, because, you know, we may think that it's this record executive or, you know, this other person being discovered, but, you know, the muse, the collective energies of the universe decide what is going to be prolific and what is not. And I trust if this music is to be heard, it will be heard, and there's not a darn thing I can do about it.
Now, the last track we're going to play is Mercy for All of Us. What would you like people to know about that track?
Well, I think about this idea of forgiveness, and it's a big issue for us as humans, right? You know, this, first of all, the idea of mercy, you know, is mercy, love, any of those words can be somewhat of a loaded phrase. And the idea of, say, loving your enemy is a powerful idea. But as humans, it's really, really hard to do. I think you guys can probably admit that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, we can set the idea like, yeah, it's a good idea. And like, yes, I want to do it. Even the best among us, like, sets that as a goal. But to actually really, really do that is quite challenging. And so it sort of sets out, you know, this idea that we all are imperfect. And every single one of us, I remember reading the story about Mr. Rogers, that on his deathbed, he didn't feel worthy. He felt unworthy. If Mr. Rogers is not worthy, then who is worthy? You know, this is just the state of the human condition. That's so, you know, we all are, you know, none of us are perfect. We all make mistakes. We're all worthy of forgiveness. And if we can't envision this forgiveness and mercy for everyone, then you really can't have it for anyone. And I'm not saying that's an easy thing to digest, because it's actually not within our nature. It's our nature as humans. When people hurt us, we want to punish, and we want to alienate. And so it's a high ideal. That's expressed in the song.
Yeah. Now, we'll play the show out with that song. How do people get a hold of your music, or where do they find out more about you?
Anywhere that music is sold, you can look up the Peter Lawrence Band, or you can go to the Peter Lawrence Band website, peterlawrenceband.com.
Fantastic. Now, of course, that's up on our website as well. People can listen when they're listening, or they can find it with one click. And get a hold of some of this great music. So thank you for being on the show, and we're going to play out with Mercy for All of Us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Peter.
Shed our pain around the mill. drank that poison, and glasses were filled. The room was spinning, we got ripped and spilled.
To www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, all shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.